Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on the Occupy movement with Russell McIver, the editor of The Corporate Crime Reporter and author of On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. We will discuss whether the closure of some of the Occupy sites across America will diffuse the movement's message about how the 1% have bought most of our politicians, who in turn have sold out the 99%. Then we will look into the latest sex scandal ensnaring Herman Cain's presidential campaign, with the fifth woman coming forth with accusations of a 13-year adulterous affair with the candidate whose exit from the race will benefit Newt Gingrich, a confessed adulterer who has sought redemption from the religious right, the group that dominate the Republican caucus in Iowa. Alternet's Washington Bureau Chief Adele Stan joins us. She has been following the Tea Party and their favorite son, Herman Cain, who denies the latest charges unequivocally as he reassesses his campaign. Then finally, we will examine the apparent repeat of history in Tehran, where this time the British Embassy was sacked by so-called students, calling it a den of spies, this time chanting death to England. Dan Brunberg, the author of Reinventing Khomeini, The Struggle for Reform in Iran, joins us to discuss this violation of international law and assess what the fallout might be as Western powers turn the screws on a paranoid and isolated theocratic regime. I'm now speaking with Russell McIver, who is the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter. His books include Corporate Crime and Violence, Big Business Power and the Abuse of the Public Trust, Corporate Predators, The Hunt for Mega Profits and the Attack on Democracy, and On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. Welcome to Background Briefing, Russell McIver.
Thank you, Ian.
And you have been at the Occupy Washington, D.C. sites, but I understand that I'm using the word plural. Is there are two different Occupy sites in D.C.?
There are two different ones. And one's on Pennsylvania and 14th. The other's up at a park a couple blocks away. And two different scenes. The one down on Pennsylvania Avenue is much more active politically, more grounded in the anti-corporate movements of the last 20 years. Doesn't want to be co-opted by the Democratic Party. Is very wary about Democratic Party operatives infiltrating. The other one, mostly younger people, a lot more homeless people, more steeped in sort of street anarchism, and more susceptible to being hijacked by the Democratic Party. And I think there's been serious attempts to do that up at that other site. So really interesting how it's shaking out in D.C.
Well, I spoke with Kevin Zeese the other day, and of course he was Ralph Nader's press secretary and ran as a Green Party candidate, and he was quite angry about the what he said was the Democratic Party's attempt to co-opt the movement. What evidence is there that the Democratic? I mean, I still. I'm reminded of Will Rogers' adage about the Democratic Party. You know, I'm not. It's not an organized.
Yeah, I think some of the evidence is from people I've spoken to have been there that when there have been disputes about challenging Obama, challenging Democrats as being the party of Obama to being the presidential candidate of Wall Street, even still this round. There's also been, Kevin has more information than I have, but I've just learned by hanging out there a little bit and by listening to people who've been there that there is real tension between Democratic operatives on the ground at that site and, people who are not, who don't want anything to do with the Democratic Party. And I know that, in fact, there's a tension like that throughout the country. And I noticed it even I live in West Virginia, and there's an Occupy Martinsburg, West Virginia, and I noticed that tension even at Occupy Martinsburg, West Virginia. So I guess it's going to play out, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, the interesting thing to me is whether Occupy Wall Street is going to save Obama next year. And I think the Democratic Party is banking that it will at least help do that. After all, he is, you know, taking more money than any candidate the last round from Wall Street, and it looks like, you know, he's going to be taking a lot of money this round from Wall Street. If you look at agency by agency of the public sector in Washington that's supposed to be controlling corporate power, each one of them is acting as they acted or worse than under the Bush administration. So if you look at most recently, let's say the SEC's civil settlement with Citigroup, which was just shot down by a federal judge in New York, that kind of settlement is no different from a Bush administration SEC settlement with Wall Street banks.
Well, it took a judge to do the people's business and to bring about some justice.
Right. So, you know, it's really it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. But a lot of the people in the Occupy movements around the country are very wary of being hijacked in this election year by the corporate Democratic Party.
Well, at this point, though, we've had New York, the Zuccotti Park being evicted, and now the L.A. Occupy LA. It was a semi eviction, and now there's a rumor that tonight there will be the final stage of an eviction. I'm just wondering how the movement's message about how the 1% have bought most of our politicians, who in turn have sold out the 99%. It seems to me that that's an extremely valuable political message to get out to the rest of America, particularly to the endangered middle class. And it does transcend the parties. What's your sense of whether that will?
Where does it go in an election year?
Right.
What are our options in this coming election year? We have none. So I guess the only option is to continue to hit the streets and continue to raise the banner, if the press will continue to listen. My guess is they won't. My guess is they're going to shift the attention. That we've had our 15 seconds of fame, and they're going to shift the attention to the battle between the two corporate parties.
But that's always been the way. The press are interested in process.
Yeah. So the question for the people on the ground is, how do we? I think there might be a parallel. I was thinking about this today. I don't know if this is going on a limb a bit, but it might be similar to Egypt, where the secularists take to the streets while the Brotherhood takes the election. And in this country, it might be that we take to the streets while the corporatists take the election. And I'm worried about that. Clearly, we have not developed a deep, strong political operation that will knock off the two political parties, to our eternal shame. Here we have the most we have in our hands, in each of our hands, the highest form of technological communication, access to information instantly. We can reach everybody, all of our compatriots all over the country and all over the world. We can see breaking news instantaneously, and yet we can't get 1% in the polls, and yet we can't fundamentally change the political system. So,
but why not? What about?
We have to look inward, and I think re-examine what's happening here, because we should. We're nowhere. We've effectively failed to make a blip or a dent in challenging the political power. Occupy Wall Street has, but in terms of straight out political power, we haven't. Now there are those who speak, who are in the forefront of speaking about Occupy the Occupy movements who say we should give up on the political system. It's corrupt. It's gone. And there's nothing we can do about it. We just have to push it over. But what does push it over mean?
Right.
In this context.
Well, I think the reality is that
undefined.
Yeah, I think the reality is if you abdicate the political system, the worst possible people will control it. And not that it's pretty bad as it stands. Again, I'm speaking with Russell Mahiba, the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter and the author of On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. I just wonder, though, Russell, whether since the Tea Party, even though it was a phony, turned out to be a phony grassroots movement, albeit there were a genuine impulse there amongst many of its members, but it was corralled by political pros like Karl Rove and Dick Armey and funded in part by the Kochs. But they did take 60 seats, and they were politically, they went straight for electoral power, and they got it, and they've essentially hijacked the Republican Party. Why can't a group of progressive insurgents take over this corrupt Democratic Party?
Well, there are some, like myself and Zeiss, who say that the corrupt Democratic Party is too far gone, and we wouldn't want to carry their banner.
But the game is rigged.
I understand what you're saying, though. There are others who believe, like Norman Solomon and others, who believe that that it can be done.
Well, realistically, the system in this country is a two-party system. It's entrenched. It's a huge road to hoe to establish a third party. Only a billionaire like Ross Perot had a chance at that. It just seems to me unrealistic. It'll take time.
Well, it might seem unrealistic, but you know, here's something that's always in the back of my mind. We have the communication skills. We have the technology. We can reach people. We can go door to door and present our message. But something's missing. There is something missing. I don't think it's just about the money and the power. I think there's something missing about the way we present the message, the way we've delivered the message. Now, this might be a different situation now, where the 99 versus the 1 has gotten a lot of publicity and might lay the groundwork for something better. But to me, it still hasn't been argued conclusively to me that an attractive candidate, Tommy Douglas, you know, I do a group called Single Payer Action, and there's the most celebrated Canadian, Tommy Douglas, got elected to be premier of Saskatchewan. And got pushed through single payer through that province and then through all of Canada. Mm-hmm. Now, true, they have a different system up there, but it was about he was a boxer, he was a preacher, he was a populist, and he fought for the working people. And it was a different time, I agree, but we might be coming into a different time. And it might be that if we refine our ability to deliver the message and we go door to door, and we hit the streets, we can start anew, precinct by precinct, and start turning the country around. So I'm not one to throw in the towel on electoral politics. I don't believe that the door is closed and that we've lost it. I believe that, you know, we have to look inward and see how we can make it work, and this might be a time to do that.
Well, Barney Frank, as you know, Russell Mahiba just threw in the towel and is retiring. And in his back and forth, in his farewell banter with the press, he was asked about the state of politics. And he, in terms of the Republican Party, he basically said, look, you know, the Republican Party is divided into two groups, those that think like Michelle Bachmann and those that us terrified that if they don't go along with the program, Michelle Bachmann will run against him in the next primary. So that party has lost its mind.
That's true, but I would also argue that the Democratic Party is divided into two groups: those who think like Obama and those who refuse to stand up to him. I mean, it's pretty shameful that there's not one progressive Democrat who threw their hat in the ring to at least challenge Obama in the primaries in the year of 99 versus 1.
So,
in the year of 99 versus 1, you would think there would be at least one primary challenger so that he wouldn't continue to move to Wall Street and carry the cash without even thinking about it, without even debating it, without even, you know, having any shame about it.
Right. If there's anybody, it's on the Republican side in the form of Ron Paul. I mean, at least he's challenging some of the status quo, even though his domestic vision is pretty black and bleak.
I would urge people to start anew,
right,
to discard both parties, to hit the streets with Occupy, and then hit the precincts and start talking about the very basic issues. Keep it simple, 1 versus 99. Get rid of the private health insurance companies, death penalty for the private health insurance companies. Very simple messaging. You don't need big treatises. You don't need working papers. You don't need working groups. The message is simple. People are being pushed up against the wall. They'll be receptive to it. And I say we start anew.
Well, Russell McIver, again, the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter and the author of On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. What, given that the Occupy LA is about to be evicted, I just wonder about the continuing the messaging. I spoke to one of the founders of the encampment down here the other day. Mm-hmm. And he said it was really depressing to try and keep the idealism of those that founded it together and constantly being infiltrated by all the street people and the junkies and having their food stolen, et cetera, and actually portrayed a fairly dystopian picture and also the difficulty of getting anybody to agree to anything because the General Assembly by nature was an endless debating society. So... given the power of the simple message that, and frankly, so far, I think, wouldn't you agree that that they've gotten pretty good press? The 99% versus the 1% is out there in the zeitgeist, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this has been a huge victory for the anti-corporate forces, and this is the kind of press that we've looked for all these years. And I'm fearful that that's going to be it, that it's going to be our 15 minutes of fame, and that's going to be it. So we have to be ready to transform the energy to start building real political power. I think everybody agrees we haven't done that yet. The question is, what next? And I would encourage people to, you know, go out into the streets, to attend these general assemblies, to participate, but also to keep an eye on the future. And the future is this coming election year. And what can we do to transform it, to tip it over and to start something new?
Well, I thank you for joining us, Russell.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Russell McIver, who is the editor of the Corporate Crime Reporter. His books include Corporate Crime and Violence, Big Business Power and the Abuse of the Public Trust, Corporate Predators, The Hunt for Mega Profits and the Attack on Democracy, and On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back with the Washington Bureau Chief of Alternate, Adele Stan, talking about Herman Cain's latest sex scandal.